interested in this and spend a lot of time doing it. Our vision is to enable the Office of Children's Services to implement its policies and procedures for children and families in a culturally sensitive and consistent manner across the state. And how we do that is our mandate from the federal and state government is to evaluate the policies and procedures of the Office of Children's Services and to make recommendations for improvements or changes that would improve child protection. We have traveled a lot this year. We've been to 22 communities. And as we travel around, what we do is we split into teams, we go into different communities, we visit OCS offices and community partners and ask what works and what doesn't work, and form our recommendations from those public interactions. We meet with all whoever we can in different communities where we go, but always people who have interest in child protection and interaction with the Office of Children's Services. As we've traveled to those 22 communities this year, we found that not every place is broken. We have met many, many line workers who are going to heroic lengths to protect children in some pretty difficult situations, but there are some very committed, talented people who are doing heroic work. And lots of their working conditions are very difficult situations, particularly with technology. Technology is a very great problem in Alaska for our social workers. However, we found that the current structure and operation of OCS is not adequately protecting children in Alaska. And examples that we found, I will give you a few examples of some of the things that we found. And these are very recent examples within the past couple months. We did a review in Copper River Basin in November, and we went from Tok down through Gokona, Glen Allen, Copper Center, Kenny Lake, Chitna, and Valdez. And community partners there told us that the rate of child sexual abuse in that region is 90%. And when we tried to confirm that with law enforcement, they said they thought that was a little high. It's probably 80%. When we asked how many reports of harm were made in regard to this, it was 6. It's a one-person field office and one-person social worker who works in the Glen Allen field office by herself. She's relatively new, and she is frequently out of the office. And so when people call in, there's nobody there. There isn't an SSA to answer her phone. There's no assistance. And so community members, pretty much statewide, in some of these situations have simply stopped calling OCS. They're not making reports of harm because there's no response.
Madam Chair? Can we ask questions?
Yes, please. Representative Keller.
Thank you. I was wondering what partnering agencies, how many and who are we talking? Are the teachers telling you of teachers and this?
We talked to schools, the troopers, public health.
I just want to get an idea of how many.
We average between 3 and 6, depending on the size of the community. We always talk to law enforcement. We always talk to the schools. We always talk to OCS. And then whoever else we can add on to that. Pardon me?
Public health.
Public health. Whoever is there. Mental health. We really try to contact mental health providers. And tribes, of course. Tribes are the number one contact we make a big effort to connect with.
Representative Gardner.
Aren't some of these people mandated reporters? I mean, can they just decide to not call anymore if there's schools or?
They call and call and call and nobody answers the phone in that region.
And they don't have cell phones, voicemail.
The voicemail will say it's 3 weeks ago.
Thank you. Yeah. Do you think that we need a statewide number or something like that then?
Or certainly in the MATSU office to pick up calls when the field office worker is not available. They can in some field offices they can forward those calls to a more regional office. I don't know if they have the technology in Glen Allen to do that, and I don't know if they have it in Valdez either. And those are the only two offices in the eastern side of
Alaska. It just takes a different phone.
Yeah, we're gonna talk to you a lot about technology because that's a problem.
Representative Roses.
I don't know if they've changed the reporting
system? I mean, does it all have to be done electronically or over the phone? As I recall, and Carol Owens is sitting back there, and I was hoping she was going to do the presentation because I, quite frankly, wanted to give her a grade since we used to teach school together.
Uh-huh. We'll talk later. We won't
talk later. Yeah. But as I recall, and Carol can correct me if I'm wrong, but I seem to recall having several in-services as a teacher back when it was called the FYS. And we had a reporting form that we were required to fill out, and we were very specifically told, you don't get to decide whether this is reportable or not. If you have a suspicion that there's a problem, you are obligated by law to report it, and you could lose your license if you didn't. Have we discontinued the mail-in form?
The mail-in form we know nothing about, but I will tell you that the people that we've interviewed, and it's just more than in that area of Alaska, the frustration level is quite high because either they can't make a phone contact, they want to do it immediately, in particular at the Glen Allen office. I can tell you just from personal experience, Carol Olson and I have tried to make an appointment to meet with the OCS worker there, and we were there in November, and our meeting is the 19th of February. And it's not her fault entirely because we just can't get through to her. There's no one there to answer the phone for her. There's one person who serves a huge area, in our opinion. There needs to be additional staff there, at least do nothing else but pick up the phone. And so what happens is partnering agencies who are mandatory reporters, they call, and what they eventually do, they go to other places. They'll go to the troopers for help. They'll go to CACs for help. In this particular area, they are developing a CAC. They're finding other ways to get around. And there is it's a high level of frustration. Now, the answer of bouncing it into Wasilla certainly would be an answer, but then that's not for us to make that decision on how to improve that.
And part of the delay from November to now is because of vacations. You know, some of us were on vacation. She was on vacation. I mean, some
and
of
the
that
holidays
is,
were there.
Yeah, yeah. Some of that's explainable, but she's not, this is not her. This is an untenable job that she has to. An enormous territory. It's a Pandora's box of issues out there. A lot of the situation is not that people are calling all the time. That's a culture of not talking about it. And so that's a whole other aspect of child sexual abuse out there that isn't being addressed. But OCS is not responsive to this at this point.
I used to work at the Tope Clinic
for four years.
So I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
There's a whole nother scenario that I'd like to talk to you about sometime of other things that happen.
Mm-hmm. It's a complicated situation.
Yes, it is.
And OCS is not solely responsible at all by any means. But they're the key to the door. And right now, there's nobody there. And so somehow we got to get that door cracked open so other people will, be effective responding as well.
Yeah. And even the troopers, you call a trooper and sometimes it's 2 hours before they can get there,
mm-hmm.
Because they might be in the middle of something that they can't leave right then,
mm-hmm.
and then it might be 4 hours before they get there. So, there's a lot of different things mm-hmm. involved in that, but we should be able to fix some of it. So, Representative Keller, if you want to follow up, and then Representative Sisna.
I want to try to re-ask my question because that probably wasn't clear. By the way, you're from Wasilla, right?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, I'm a constituent here. I appreciate what you do. But I was trying to get my question really was the scope. I mean, you said you traveled a lot, and then you said some agencies are telling you they can't get phone answered. I would assume because of your mission that, to make things better and, help out. You reported the cases that happened to OCS. How many communities are we talking about where that's a problem and that kind of thing? Have you quantified that? That's what I was trying to get
okay.
for.
Does anybody on the team want to answer that? Okay. It first came to our we noticed at first when we really first started doing this that there was some frustration because it's, they want to be the mandatory reporters want to call, and it's not, you can't necessarily always get in when you call, and then you certainly can fax. But the problem is that sometimes when they fax, they don't get any answer back as to whether or not they've received that report of harm. There's no follow-up on it by a worker that who would receive that fax. And so when we went to the Copper River Basin, we were told on more than one occasion that they've just given up. And they've given up working with OCS, so they'll go with ICWA workers, they'll go with the state troopers, they'll go other places to try to get this, you know, to get this report of harm done and try to help somewhere. As a result, we feel, I think our findings are that the cases are underreported in that particular area. And that's just one of the areas we're going to talk about today.
Just to follow up.
Representative Keller.
I appreciate that. And as I looked at your annual report, you know, that you kind of indicated that, but I was just trying to figure out how many and how much. But I assume that you communicated this with OCS specifically as far as the place.
Yes, we have a lot of communication.
Thank you.
Okay, Representative Sisson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess I'd love to just throw in kind of a confirmation and explain that I was in Glen Allen doing kind of similar. It's not the same in that I'm looking at general health and economic stuff. But at the same time, we got stuck there because the car had a problem. So we were stuck there for almost a week. And during that time beforehand, we'd made appointments with all the people that we see, which is school and Muni and health and assorted other people in the community. And we had no problem making contacts. I did not try to contact OCS, but we had no problems making contacts with other people, changing those appointments, making new appointments, that kind of thing. Glen Allen and Copper Center, and we were Galena, we were going to a number of those communities, and they have good equipment. I mean, it's, you know, everybody has problems, but theirs is not, it's not equipment because of general problems. It may be in that specific office. But the other thing that I picked up was general reports of serious family problems. It wasn't mentioned what. Didn't alcohol huge in it, but then alcohol is going to be huge in for many of these children's lives anyway, and they were talking about that at the schools, at everywhere, about how big they are. The other thing is, it's a community that has a huge number of things happening. You've got more weather, right? More severe weather, more things happening because of the people coming through, and so I can see that the community might not be very open.
Right, and we need to emphasize too, and we use the number 80% and 90%. That's not for every community in the Copper River Basin.
Right,
there are specific communities that may have that problem, and we have no way of substantiating that those numbers. They were just thrown out.
Yeah. So. Go ahead and continue. We'll holler if we have a question.
Okay.
Another example that we recently heard was about a 14-year-old boy in another region of Alaska who had recently been hospitalized for suicidal ideation and intoxication 3 times during the prior couple months. He was found passed out in the street in sub-zero weather, intoxicated, and law enforcement found him, and OCS declined to respond when contacted by them in the middle of the night. They just wouldn't come. So law enforcement contacted us, but they had to deal with it. We had another part of Alaska. We had a little 4-year-old boy.
Just a second. Representative Gardner has a question.
In cases like the one on the previous screen, you have the tools and the access to verify that actually happened?
Yep.
Because sometimes people talk about these things, and then when you try to find
this
out.
This was presented to us by the chief of police.
Okay.
And then we even confirmed it by talking to, I forgot the title, the regional director, the regional supervisor. So.
Thank you.
We actually asked them to do an investigation into this case.
Which they did, and it's been fixed.
Yeah.
Okay.
In this example, there was a 4-year-old boy in foster care who required, actually it was a surgical procedure, And he couldn't obtain it for weeks because they simply could not get the signature page from the social worker. And so this little four-year-old waited for weeks. And this is not uncommon at all, that they just can't get that last little piece done because they can't get a hold of anybody to get it, you know, get it completed. So kids wait for medical care.
So now, is this like something that they have to go out and get from a parent's signature, or is
they
this
have to
just
sign as the guardian?
The OCS does.
Yes.
And so that was
just a matter of a piece of paper, and they could not get the social worker to respond.
Do you remember what kind of a procedure they were talking?
Oral surgery.
So something to do with his teeth?
Mouth, yeah. So we are coming specifically, we've looked at many, many things. As a committee, we've hashed over so many topics of what we would present to you this year in terms of recommendations, and we've honed it down to just one. And we think that this is an urgent, pressing, critical situation. Sometime this fall, a decision was made to move the highest supervisory position, the staff manager supervisor 5 position, from Bethel to Wasilla. They didn't notify the Bethel line workers. They didn't let them know this was coming. They didn't ask them how they felt about it. They didn't ask them for alternatives. An email was sent to them on December 7th saying, your highest supervisory position is going to be moving to Wasilla. And they reacted with total panic. They are so upset about this. Because before this, they had their administrative staff in the Bethel field office. They had some vacancies, but basically the 5 was there and a 4 was filled. There's a staff manager 5 position and 2 supervisory 4 positions for permanency and for investigations. With the administration housed within that office, they have been able to establish really good working relationships with the tribes. So they work collaboratively in teams. A social worker with their partner in a village. So if they got tied up with weather, there was a report of harm, they could contact their ICWA partner and have something follow through to protect children and families. And they're very proud of that. It's a model that OCS has been aiming for statewide, you know, for years to build that relationship. And in the Bethel region, it seems to work very effectively. OCS has spent a lot of money doing joint training with their tribal members, and there was a conference at the beginning of January called Pathways to Hope. It was a sexual abuse summit that was put on by Tribal Law and Policy Institute. It was very powerful. And the tribe actually sent more than six workers to Anchorage to participate in that. That wasn't funded by OCS. It was paid for by the tribe for their OCS partners. The workers are unbelievably concerned about not having on-site supervision and how that's going to affect their ability to do their duties and to continue to have tribal collaboration with community partners. So based on the input that we had from the Bethel region, it is our strongest recommendation that we are recommending the creation of a 5th OCS region. Currently there are 4. Currently, southwestern Alaska is included in what they call SCRO, South Central Regional Office, and it covers the Bethel region, Kodiak, all Kenai Peninsula over to, I don't think Kenai is in it, Kodiak, and then it goes over to Valdez, all the eastern side, and Matsu. It's an enormous region. Bethel alone is about the size of Oregon, and it has 56 villages in it. To add that to the supervision of Wasilla doesn't make any sense at all. Anybody on the street asking, if you ask them if they thought you think this is a good plan, they would say no. It's like having the superintendent of Anchorage School District be housed out of state. You know, you need to be there. You need to be on site. You need to, you know, work with your staff.
Any questions so far? I just want to mention that Representative Coghill has joined us. And John, would you like to come forward and join us up here? You'll have to bring
a
chair.
Room.
We'll make room.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll sit back here because I have to run in and out.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
All right. Representative Gardner.
Talking about having a 5th OCS region, I'm sort of curious about what the regions are, what the population is, and what the incidence of abuse is? I mean, is it relatively, are the regions relatively equal in terms of caseloads, or is there a lot of wide variation? I mean, obviously with 54 villages and the highest sexual assault rate in the nation, that should be a high priority, but how does that compare to regions 2, 3, and 4?
Ms. Sandoval is going to have to answer that specifically, so you have okay. accurate information. I don't feel qualified to answer that kind of factual stuff. But
Representative Fairclough has a question okay. also.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could you tell me where you got the that statement, highest rate of sexual assault? Is that off the UCR?
That's been coming out at the sexual abuse summit that they just did. Those are trooper numbers. They have a trooper statistician that has gone through. It was just published in the paper. They have been claiming that for years. And the district attorney's office actually had a special prosecutor that was lined up to go out and help with the prosecution of those cases 2 years ago. And then the law enforcement component started falling apart out there. They have an enormous problem with it in southwestern Alaska.
I would just say that the UCR that reports those particular numbers, I don't recall Bethel being up there. Fairbanks was number one this past year, and so maybe because it's child sexual abuse, maybe the number is different, that I'm not recalling it appropriately. But I know that they that region makes that statement, and I certainly know that they have high rates. I'm just looking for where that number is coming from.
And there's a lady in the back there that raised her hand. So
I believe in one of our letters that we have a packet of, there was a statistic that said there were 161 sexual abuse cases in the year 2007 in that particular area. So that would be.
And there's 650 in Anchorage, or. 350. So.
But proportionately, it's
yeah.
That was my question.
That's my question.
Yeah, because when you do it per thousand, that's where you really get your real numbers when it's per thousand, you know. Representative Seaton, you had a question?
Yes, I did. And that was on this supervisor five position manager or overseas, was that a vacant position at the time, or was that, did they actually move a person and take them out of?
It was a vacant position, and what they're talking about doing is eliminating that position in Bethel and have it picked up by somebody in Wasilla. So that was it's a financial cost-saving effort.
Now, I have a question about that. Is that going to be an additional person in Wasilla, or is it going to be the current person that's there that's already got their hands full?
Yes, the second.
Okay. Representative Roses.
In all fairness to the department, a couple of us here sit on the Health and Social Services budget, and sometimes when those positions are transferred, it wasn't a decision that was made by the department. It may have been a decision that was made by those working on the Finance Committee, because we take a look at the number of positions that have gone unfilled. We don't always know why. We just know that you've had a position you've funded in the budget. It hasn't been filled in a certain amount of time, but we see an increase request in the budget for a position somewhere else. And so what appears to be a criticism for the department may indeed be a criticism for the legislature and the Finance Committee, because their responsibility is to put the money where the needs are, and if you keep having a position you can't fill, why not move the money to where the position can be filled? So in all fairness to the department, this may not be their fault.
And I don't want to appear, none of us feel critical of the department. What we're trying to do is to make
identify a need.
Identify a need completely.
Correct.
Totally
and,
identify
and
a need.
And I appreciate that.
Yep.
And you know what? Those type of questions, Wayne, because Tammy Sandoval will be up here, and then we'll be able to ask her those questions because she knows the answers. And we'll get those answers directly from her in just a minute. So you go ahead, and we'll try to ask the right person the questions.
Okay. What the Bethel Field Office and community partners and the Citizens Review Panel are requesting is the existing staff manager's supervisor 5 position, the permanency 4 position, and the investigative supervisor 4 position all remain housed in the Bethel area. This is just critical. These line workers are falling apart out there. They were at their wits' end when we met with them. They are banking on action from our presentation to you. They are concerned that they will not have adequate supervision, that they cannot provide child protection services. Kids will be hurt or die because of the way that this is structured at this point. And we totally agree. And we think that this only is logical and good management to have this region be self-contained as a new region. The other part of our...
Representative Gardner.
Would you say, thank you, they're in worse shape than the single worker in Glen Allen?
Probably at this point, because there's so many of them that are going to leave if this is not fixed. We just can't stress how critical this situation is to these workers, and they're going to leave. Yeah. So it could be worse.
Representative Fairfall.
Madam Chairman, on this particular issue, as far as the Bethel region goes, I'm sure many of you are aware that we're having trouble over at public safety in Bethel right now. Mm-hmm. And so the issues are probably intertied, would be my guess, as far as the stress load and caseloads. And by no means am I trying to be disparaging or try to get the number one status for a different region in our community about sexual assault. But I did chair the task force on sexual assault and domestic violence, and we did visit Bethel this past year, and that number didn't make it into our realm while we were there. So, and we had Michelle there, so that's why I was at awe of where the number came from. But anyway, I'm wondering if we're going to look at this under the Health and Human Service budget or not. We probably need to talk to public safety too, in some way. They are stressed, very stressed, and at least from the task force position. We're really looking for a different approach, possibly, than a Western culture approach, at least from our task force's perspective. Thank you.
The other part of our request is to provide money to update technology in the Bethel office. When we talk to workers, they are using their server broke in Bethel at OCS, so they're being routed through Anchorage. And when they need to print a document, they push print, and then they wait 5 minutes for the second icon to come up to push the second print. So they're sitting there with understaffed offices, poor or no supervision, and they have this technological issue with the computer, and that's their link to Anchorage and to Wasilla. Everything goes by internet, and it's all so slow. Additionally, their phone service doesn't work, and they were reporting that sometimes their voice message system is 24-hour delay. So when these workers get calls in the middle of the night and they go out on an emergency, they can deal with, you know, somebody who's intoxicated or an angry parent, a whole bunch of kids that they can't handle by themselves. They call for backup, and nobody answers the phone. We had one of the workers is pregnant, and she went out and was assaulted by a parent and couldn't get a hold of a supervisor, who the investigative supervisor currently is working out of Homer. And so this woman in the middle of the night was faced with calling, you know, somebody in Homer to help her, which is, I mean, that's not even plausible. They need a new phone system that is effective and works like our phones work. And they need a computer system that works. Why would making a Region 5 be worth it? According to the Bethel Field Office, workers, on-site supervision is critical. The uniqueness of the culture and its effect on child protection is currently understood and valued, and they are very afraid that that is going to be lost. It's taken them years to develop this bond, and they are really, really afraid this is going to be lost. There's been a willing collaboration between the OCS and tribal agencies because of the knowledgeable on-site supervisor, which would be maintained.
Excuse me, Susan, but I'm trying to remember what you said a while ago, and I thought you said that the supervisor position was vacant.
It is vacant now. It was vacated 2 weeks ago.
Oh, so up until then it was full.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes. Yes, it was full up until a couple weeks ago.
Okay. And Representative Roses, you had a question.
Just to give me a sense of how long and how extensive your review was, how long were you in Bethel and how many people did you have?
We actually talked to the Bethel people when they were at the Sexual Abuse Summit on
Pathways to Hope in January.
Second week in January, approximately. There were maybe 7 or 8 people. The supervisor wrote us a letter, and then we have, I think that you have, copies of 15 letters written from community partners who also support this and have concerns and have expressed those concerns. So pretty extensive.
And the reason I don't want to diminish this at all. I mean, this is a serious issue, and it needs to be treated as a very serious issue. But I got to tell you, as a teacher, if you'd have come to me one day and asked me how things were going, I would have given you a different answer if it had been a different day. I mean, if I'd just been inundated with 15 phone calls and felt frustrated because I didn't have the answers to help somebody with, my assessment of where I was and how effective I thought the job was would be totally different if it happened to be a day in which I felt like I just helped somebody. That's why I was just trying to put a perspective on this.
I think that the project manager and I have had almost daily contact with that office.
That's what I wanted to hear. Thank you.
Yeah.
And along with that, there was the Pathways to Hope conference that was held in Anchorage. Was probably one of the most significant conferences that we've been to dealing with child abuse amongst Alaska Native students. Their area of emphasis is going to be in the Bethel area. And they're doing some amazing things. And they recognize that area as a critical area of need, even the people themselves.
Follow-up, Representative Roses.
Thank you. And I appreciate that. That's why I asked the question the way I did. How many people went? How extensive was your review? So to hear you follow up and say there were several different opportunities for input and then that you've continued to follow up on that is helpful, because then we're not taking one little snapshot in time. This is a continuum. So,
and I think many of the Bethel line workers are actually at the Legislative Information Office today listening.
Thank you.
And I'm real glad to hear that that the natives themselves are now on board and want to see some of this, because it was 93 to 97, we would have things happening at the clinic in Tok, and many times people would bring kids in, the parents would be intoxicated, we'd call a trooper, we'd call public health, we would do the exams and all that, but when everybody sobered up, they would say, we don't remember what happened. And so there would be no case, and we had gotten called in usually like 4 o'clock in the morning or something like that. And it was not talked about at all. So I would say there's really good progress if we're having cooperation and talking taking place. That's wonderful. Because it hasn't always been that way in the past.
And to build on that, on-site administration will result in greater staff retention, but some of the staff there are UPIC speaking line workers, and to lose them would be such a loss. That would be such a loss.
Representative Keller.
I just wanted to comment on that. I appreciate the fact that they're there.
Yes.
And I do happen to have a little bit of history of following Bethel OCS, and I think things are better there now. That's the other thing, you know, no matter how challenging they are, you know, and I really don't know what I'm saying, because I don't know how long those line workers have been there, but I think in a scope of 5-10 years, like you just pointed out, there's been some improvements, I'm pretty sure.
In terms of staff retention, when the group talked to us 3-4 weeks ago, I think, and can correct me if I'm wrong, 3 years was the longest. That was the one who had the most tenure there. It was 3 years. In such a complicated area where those relationships take such a long time to build up and to understand the region and the travel and just the job. 3 years, you're just getting your feet wet, really. And we've got to do anything we can do to keep those people out there, because they're a really remarkable group of workers. The lawsuit issue has come up. You know, the case in Anchorage, you know, where $2.4 million was just awarded, has kind of caught fire, and we have heard from tribes and other people that OCS knows what to do, and they need to start doing it. And this is, we think that forming Region 5 is a responsive answer to this this community.
Representative Fairful.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Have you presented to the administration, specifically to Health and Human Services?
We talked to Carlene Jackson and Tammy this morning. We talked to Tammy yesterday. I just got to Juneau, so I don't.
So they haven't had much time to review your information. The amendments to the budget were due by February 18th, and they're starting to come in from the governor. They haven't had time from your timetable that I'm looking at to respond to these, and you're bringing them to us. That's what I'm trying to get a timeline on.
We talked to our liaison to OCS on January 10th with this idea.
And have we seen any response inside the budget or the amendments that are coming forward?
No.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Continue.
As far as SCRO, the South Central Regional Office out of Wasilla, the Child Services Manager there, James Steele, is totally in agreement with the formation of a Region 5. He doesn't need this extra region added to that of Wasilla and, you know, the eastern part of Alaska. This he also agrees with this. The major reason that we're suggesting this is it's better for kids. The system is too spread out. I mean, the proposal to put this in Wasilla is a poor second choice at best. We can do better. This needs to be local, and it needs to be informed, and it needs to be responsive, and it needs to be immediate for kids.
What'd I do?
No, I don't know.
Hit the wrong button.
You have a simple job, Fred.
You said it was the best.
Not for me.
I use my left hand. I must switch fingers.
It's the simplicity.
Exactly.
Yeah. No?
No, we did that.
Yeah, we did this.
We're right.
Yeah, we're right. What's it going to cost? Everything in front of the legislature is what's it going to cost? Very little. What does it cost if we don't act? To use a UPIC analogy, the structures out there are all built on pilings. And using that analogy of OCS, the piling's in the ground, but they're starting to fall. And the workers are hanging onto the walls, but the whole structure is tilting and sliding and falling apart. And they need the roof over it. They need the pilings pounded back in and solid. And at this point, it's very fragile. The positions already exist. The two fours and the five already exist. They need to be funded to create. So that's not new money. That's money that should be there. New positions, they're going to need a child services manager. They're going to need admin reviewers. They're going to need some technology money to reconfigure computers to form a new region so they all go there instead of Wasilla.
Representative.
Thank you. Can we explore this computer problem a little bit? I know Representative Nelson has complained a long time about how things work for her when she's trying to use her Access Outlook and her stuff. Do the workers in Bethel have to use a system that's in Anchorage? Is that where the hang-up is? It's not just their printer connected to the computer send. It has to go to Anchorage and then through? Is that what's happening?
Their server broke. It cost $12,000, according to them, to the line workers. Their impression is that it cost $12,000 to get their server fixed, but they have antiquated computers. And so much of a line worker's job now is administrative. They have to do ORCA. They have to do a ton of it is on the computer, and their computer system is so slow that it's a huge waste. They're not doing social work. When we were down in, Carol Olson and I were down in Wrangell and Petersburg the other day and met with Deborah Downs, who's the supervisor here, and she's terrific. And she said, we need to stop being called social workers. We're not social workers anymore. We're, you know, we do sort of child protection, but not even. We don't have time. We are spread so thin. This budget is so tight. We don't have money for clerical help. We don't have money for technology. We don't have money for travel. And we don't have time to do social work. And so families are falling through the cracks.
But Madam Chair, just to make sure I understand, in Wrangell, thank you. In Wrangell, for example, are they accessing systems in Anchorage?
Wrangell doesn't have anybody in Wrangell. We have to call to Petersburg to get our people to come.
Okay, so the people in Petersburg, they're trying to reach Orca. Is that, does that reside in Anchorage? And so they have to access Anchorage, and then anything they print has to come back out?
You'll have to ask Tammy Sanable that.
Okay.
I just know it does not work in Bethel. And when you have to wait 5 minutes to push print for one paper, and have to do that infinite times a day for all the travel requests and the requests for funds for families and the Social Security applications and the birth certificates and copying discovery and all the technological time-consuming things, they should have the fastest, best equipment in the state over anybody else because they have the least amount of time. They are juggling so many balls, and the faster they juggle, more balls keep getting added, and they drop them, and they don't have time even to bend down and pick them back up again. And it's the kids who are falling through the cracks. The administrative paperwork stuff is maintaining, but the kids are not.
Representative Gardner.
It's kind of a rhetorical question, but if somebody wants to answer it when they get to it, why are we printing stuff? And then somebody has to file it, and it's stacked up in a desk. We can have it all online.
The computers
don't work. The computers don't. Oh, okay.
Paperwork is being sent to other offices like Bathurst.
It can be emailed.
If you want to get Social Security numbers, birth certificates.
Representative Sisson.
Thank you. I've heard similar stories in different areas, and it's behavioral health. It's not just OCS, but of the fact that you've got an investigator that's come in for the and these may be different systems, but they're still the state stuff. And they're checking on, for instance, Medicaid. They're doing an investigation, and you go to the computer, turn on the computer, you try to get the information, and it won't show. I mean, lots of that kind of stuff. Every place out in the Aleutians. I was in Bethel as well. Ran into problems people were talking about there. Road system doesn't seem to have as much trouble. But places that are separated from road systems seem to have more. But even in Seward, I ran into the same kinds of stories about long periods of time to do anything. And it does sound like some real investigation needs to be done of just how much our technology problems are costing us.
You know, we interview a lot of people. And we go out of our way to interview line workers because we kind of feel that they're the unheard voice in the area of child protection. And our findings are that they're extremely frustrated because they cannot do the job that they were hired for. And the job that they were hired for was to protect children, but they are swamped by ORCA. ORCA that doesn't work or it's too slow. The constant amount of paperwork that they're required to fill out. We've had them in tears talking to us about the frustration level that they feel because no one listens. Their supervisors don't listen, nobody in the office listens, and they're on their own. The turnover rate is tremendous. I received a call 2 weeks ago from a former police officer telling me about the problems of just doing the job and what can they do to fix just the paperwork aspect of it so they can do the work that's expected of them by you and by the Office of Children's Services. And those people are really the unheard voices that need to have, we need to listen to them. And because they're the ones that are in direct contact with our children. And so the frustration level, not only is it in Bethel, but it's everywhere.
We had workers in Juneau 2 days ago tell us that to take a job as a social worker is to commit professional suicide. Because you're going to be shot at by the public, you're going to be shot at by the agency, you're going to be shot at in court, and you won't do what you altruistically set out to do. It's impossible to do this job. And they hang in there as long as they can, and they leave. And we can't afford this drain of competent, caring people who would do this job under different circumstances. We have to change how they're supported. This has to change some way. To wrap up for the Region 5 request, this is not a request to expand OCS. We are asking for supplemental money to fill in the cracks of the foundation of this agency that need to be repaired. And in order to repair this part of Alaska, we firmly believe, based on all the public contact that we've had, that the only way to do that is to keep the administration out there, to form a separate region, and to become responsive to child protection in the Bethel region.
Okay. Thank you very much. Any more questions, Representative Sissa?
Well, I actually have a question of well, first of all, I should say thank you, because I think, and I know the chair was going to do the same thing, but thank you for your very hard work, because I think that kind of commitment is what makes all the difference, is when people do listen and take that special time. But Madam Chair, my question to you is, I do have questions. I note that in the audience there's Linda Lord-Jenkins from the Ombudsman's Office, and I have some questions of her, and I wondered if I could ask her some questions before we hear from the department. Is that all right?
Yes. Let's have you have her come forward, and we'll
check us through.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. The job you have is, it's got to be so much dedication for what you do, and we appreciate it, and it's not easy to come here and say the things that you have to say. So I appreciate that you're brave enough to do it, and we thank you so much for doing it.
Thank you.
And Linda, why don't you come forward? Go ahead and state your name and affiliation, and then really just tell us, just from your point of view, from different people that have called you, talked to you, I'm sure put in their frustrations to you, your thoughts from where you sit.
Wow. Madam Chairman, my name is Linda Lord-Jenkins. I'm the State of Alaska Ombudsman. I have to admit I wasn't prepared really to initiate testimony here today. As I've been listening to the Citizens Review Panel, what they talk about is, in a general scope, is not unknown to us. We have not had we're familiar with their problems with technology, but we haven't focused on those problems as we've gotten complaints. I came today and I had our 2007 caseload with me. Quite frankly, we haven't received any complaints out of Bethel this year from citizens. Very few complaints actually off the road system, and I think that's just a factor of folks in the bush not being aware that there is a resource there, and that might be my problem to inform folks of what the resource is. I think I'm more prepared really to answer questions if the panel has questions to ask.
Representative Sisna?
Thank you. And Madam Chair, I've got several questions. If I could do one at a time, or should I?
One at a time.
Okay, thank you. You have your job as an ombudsman, an ombudsman's office, has a huge range, and so you're dealing with more than just the state system, as I understand it. But I'd like to know, in that huge range that you work in, do calls on the Office of Children's Services, kind of how do they rank in terms of the calls you get?
Representative Sisna, through the chair, in 2007, OCS calls constituted about 12% of our jurisdictional caseload. In 2006, calendar, and I'm speaking calendar year 2006, OCS calls constituted about 13% of our jurisdictional caseload. They have, since I became ombudsman in 2002, hung around that range. However, in 2008, because I check caseload regularly, they've shot up to 16% of our caseload, and I don't quite know why. That's just the first 6 weeks of this year. They are, in terms of our agency activity on complaints, they are always the most time-consuming complaints. They're complaints that we spend, we go more in-depth in. They're more complex to look at because there is so much at stake. So we spend a great deal of our time looking at OCS cases.
Follow-up, Representative Sisson.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. And I guess, is it possible for you to give us a kind of an outline of what kinds of calls you get? And that's because I can't even imagine, but there must be sort of some kinds of calls that get more notice than others. For instance, is it against a family or is it against a worker or that kind of thing? Can you kind of outline what those kind of might be?
Representative Sisson, through the chair, I did a hatch mark count while I was sitting in the hallway waiting for the hearing to start. We received in 2007 13 complaints that had a component of foster homes, either foster terms of foster payments, foster homes that felt they were not being taken care of or responded to properly by the agency, foster homes that parents didn't think were proper for their children to be placed in. We received 10 complaints specifically involving a component of lack of communication from caseworkers. However, I think it's safe to say that almost all cases that we receive regarding OCS have that as a component, that they can't get communication from caseworkers, they leave messages, they don't hear back. Quite frankly, I think that's a component, that's a factor of the fact that they're so darn busy. But technology may have a lot to do with it also. We received nine of the cases had as a component the quality of the OCS investigation. Either they didn't adequately investigate charges, they didn't adequately investigate complaints of harm. We received nine complaints were from or about terms and services that were provided to grandparents. Either grandparents weren't being allowed to participate in visitation for whatever reason, or the children were being removed from grandparents. And these are just categories, first of all. And I wanted to stress that this does not mean that these allegations have always been validated, but these are just components of that. The other relative placements, terminations, the services and treatments, the quality of services and treatment was brought in. Those were filed. I think we had six cases where that was mentioned, coming in the door, as it were. Case plans where individuals believed that they had complied with case plans and yet they were not given their children back or given increased visitation. We had about five of those. That's pretty much an overview of what we have. Those are the big tickets items. We have cases that involve allegations that caseworkers were lying, that the removal was unfair, that the home studies were not adequate, that placements were bad. I think we had seven cases where it was alleged that the placement decisions were bad, either with a relative placement or a foster home placement. I think that's a pretty good summary.
Madam Chair.
Follow-up, Representative Sisson.
Thank you. How many of these instigate a larger study or complaint investigation or that kind of thing?
In 2007, we have not conducted a complete, full, formal investigation that has been completed on any of these, I can say that. We're still lagging behind in terms of the number of cases that have come in prior years because of our staffing problems. So, however, I will say that we frequently refer back to, we look at our caseload statistics and our information a lot, and we look for trends in any agency. So even though we probably have addressed these issues, Sometimes we've closed them, we've referred them to the grievance process or to the complaint process, but we keep this information in our memory banks, and we refer to this information a great deal. So the data that my office has in terms of the complaints that come in about OCS or any agency is very complete back to 2000 when we started with our new complaint system. I hope that answers your question.
Representative Sisna.
Thank you, ma'am.
I'm allowing you to proceed with this line of questioning because I think it's part of the investigation that we're, so go ahead.
What it would seem. And I and other people might think of other questions and things that I'm not asking, but do you have any ongoing cases that that you're working on that have to do with some of these problems that have come, and can you say kind of the area? Because I know that all of this stuff is confidential. And
Representative Sisna, through the chair, we do have ongoing investigations. I cannot speak specifically about the nature of the investigation. General topics include the quality of OCS investigation, relative placement, grandparent visitation, quality of OCS caseworker investigations.
And
follow-up, Representative Sisson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The last question, because I know I'm kind of hitting some limit here, but and that would be, is it, now you have an annual report where you give out some of those sorts of things, but is that something that you can make available or do make available to perhaps citizens groups or to the department itself? And is it possible for us to get a copy of maybe the kind of the data and the outcomes that give recommendations?
Representative Sisna, through the chair, we do have an annual report. The annual report that I produce, that we produce, is not similar to the huge annual reports that you see bigger agencies produce. The report that I produce is in the form of a letter to the legislature, which gives our statistical information. It outlines those specific investigations that we have released that we can talk about, and there are occasionally investigations that we cannot talk about no matter how much we redact the information. We also post our investigations online, redacted investigations online, so that we don't identify the complainant or citizens whose privacy might be infringed on or confidentiality rights might be infringed on. But those are redacted. We also have an investigation matrix that we release annually to the legislature and that we post online. And that lists by department and division chronologically those cases that we have conducted full formal investigations on. We have completed and are in the process of having printed a recommendations survey. This is the second recommendation survey that the office has done. We completed one in 2002, and we have gone back now to that date and updated that survey to see, to list again by departments and divisions those full formal investigations that we conducted and the recommendations that we made to each agency and the agency's response and how they have implemented those recommendations. All of that is public information. We also have, if the committee is interested, and we make this available also to agencies, and it is frankly public information. We have a public version of those complaints that come into our office. We can release a report that has the allegations in it, which are redacted so that the complainant is not identified, and the resolution, the summary of how we resolved the case, both of which are redacted so you can't identify the complainants. that will give you an idea of what we're seeing and how we're resolving those. We have the ability with our caseload system to take a look to see what agencies, what offices are fielding the most complaints from our complainants. We have the ability to do this all the way back to 2000, and that is information that can be made available publicly. The caseload system is under our control, so it's information that we really have to, you know, we get the request and we can provide that information. It's not something that someone can just access through an LIO, but that is information that we can make available.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Really, thank you so much. We appreciate your input. And now I'm going to have Tammy Sandervold come forward. And I know that you did give a response to the Citizens Review Panel of their 2007 report. And I guess this is the 2007 report. But just go ahead, Tammy, and tell us your response to what we've just heard.
For the record, my name is Tammy Sandoval, and I'm the director of the Office of Children's Services.
You can move that back a little bit, I think, because your voice is pretty loud.
Happy Valentine's Day.
Mm-hmm. I want to slide that back.
Okay.
No, just the microphone.
All right.
There you go.
Okay. I want to thank you, Madam Chair, and committee members for your time on the issues related to the Office of Children's Services. I'd also like to thank the Citizen Review Panel for their dedication to children and families and their advocacy in improving the practice of the Office of Children's Services. Would it be the committee's desire that I give a brief overview as to some of the things that has been going on, that have been going on since the last time I was here in this committee last year, or would you like me to respond to the CRP concerns that were raised today? What would be the committee's wish? I'm prepared for everything.
Well, I think it'd be nice for us to hear what you did because of last year's report.
Okay.
And then and let us ask questions, and then we will get to this year's report.
Okay. Very good, Madam Chair. Last year, we had just received the results of the Action for Child Protection reports that gave us a whole host of recommendations to improve in four areas: organizational culture, policy and procedures, training, and I know this. It's escaping me right now.
It'll come.
It will come. So there are a number of things that we have done since that time, and this is another chance for me to thank the CRP, because in their annual report in June, they reiterated the recommendations that had come from the Action for Child Protection reports. So we didn't have two sets of recommendations happening. So we were really grateful for that. And in their annual report to us, they recognized that there had been a number of recommendations made, and that there was no way that one agency could complete all those recommendations in a year's time. And so we indicated in our annual our report response the areas that we were going to most work on. And those are training and curriculum development as a response to the training issues, of which there are many. In the past few days that when I've had the opportunity to meet with CRP, they have indicated that there are a number of concerns regarding training, and so there's a number of things that have been underway. We have been in the process of revising our new employee training called TONE, and it's a work in progress. Initially, we brought together tribal partners and OCS staff at all levels to form an advisory committee to do that revision to the TONE curriculum. We lost some momentum because we had a number of vacancies in administration, and we lost some of the leadership in that work. However, we're grateful that in the governor's budget this year there's $427,000 allocated toward training, of which we are planning to, if authorized, put in place a new curriculum for supervisors. sort of a core training that is about their administrative hat, their coaching and mentoring hat, and their clinical hat, because they wear so many hats in their role as a supervisor of frontline staff doing the work. And we're going to get back to the tone work. I'm happy to be able to report that we've hired our last vacant administrator position, our senior level position, with a very qualified, long-standing OCS worker, supervisor, manager up through the ranks, and she will be helping to navigate and work with the training academy on integrating what we've been doing with our practice standards and what needs to happen in training. So we're going to be able to resume that work with our training.
Tammy, how soon do you think that you'll be able to put it in action?
Madam Chair, it has been in progress, and thankfully one of the Susie Hoyer from the CRP said it has improved. It has improved. We have work to go. And I'm also happy to say that or report that we do an annual staff employee survey where we learn about how things are going for staff on the front line. It's a Survey Monkey. It's through the computer. Of course, now I'm wondering if not everybody got to actually respond, but I have to check on that. 72% of our staff who responded to the survey, so that's a pretty good rate. But one of the things that we asked, we asked about a number of issues, but we asked an open-ended question at the end that says, of the things that you're most concerned about with regard to OCS, what's the top three? And training was the number one response at 52% of the people who responded. So I've been meeting with the Training Academy, and we've done some work. We've also done follow-up surveys to folks who have attended TONE, our new employee training, over the past, since July of 2007, to try to learn where the disconnect is, because when they leave TONE, the evaluations are all very good, and you would expect them to be. If they're a new worker coming in and they don't know what they've gotten themselves into, they think the training's great. And so based on the feedback from both the employee survey and the CRP, what the Training Academy did at my request was to go back and do a survey and interviews of staff that have been at work for now 6 months or so to say how helpful or not helpful was the training. Okay. And we have those survey results that we just received last month.
Okay. And Representative Gardner has a question.
Thank you. The $427,000 for training, and you said you're going to use it largely for supervisors? And the question is, how many supervisors will that be used for?
Representative Gardner, through the chair, we have approximately 40 supervisors statewide, so we'll have to do both. Some of those supervisors don't need some of those pieces of training because they've been long-standing supervisors. So this is what we're planning to build as a new supervisor when you come on board to get equipped to become a supervisor. Uh-huh. So some pieces, it's like a core training for supervisors as well. But the training money in the governor's budget is we have to spread that between three different areas. One, to expand new worker training, TONE. And what our plan is that they get the initial training, the two-week training, they go back to the field, they spend some time in the real world doing the work, trying to figure out what they learned and how that fits together, and then they'll come back after about 6 months, and they'll get another dose, another session of training so they can put all the pieces together. So we're going to use it for TONE, for new supervisors, and we need to try to eke out some of that to support workers who have been here for years and years and years but need to get out, get some continuing education credits, provide more skill-based, have them interact with their peers in other disciplines. So we have three areas that I have to use that money for to expand training.
Thank you.
The other thing that came out of last year, the action report, was that our policies and procedures needed a complete rewrite. I thought about bringing the policy and procedure manual so you could see it. It sits about this high, so it's not an easy task. But we have a work group that is a standing membership at all levels in the field, including state office folks, and they meet regularly, and they are taking the most pressing policies and procedures that we need to give direction on and revising and rewriting those first. But at a policy and procedure manual that stands about 4 inches high, it's going to take us a while.
So how far are you? Fourth of the way, or I mean,
Madam Chair, I haven't quantified it that way, because we really, it's about which work. Some policies probably could be eliminated because things have changed. So we're going through the whole thing and relooking at the way that we've changed the structure, the format. We've done everything that Action has asked us to do in the review and in the work of the policy and procedure work group. They've reviewed over 20 states' policies and procedures so that they could, because one of the recommendations from the consultant reports was, don't just revise, redo. And so we have a new format. We have a whole new way of doing business. So we're coming along. So I can't give you that we have even a fourth done.
Okay. Is there any, I'm thinking this is time sensitive.
Yeah.
You know, and so are you thinking like by the end of the year you'll be finished or?
Madam Chair, having now been an administrator in child welfare for a number of years, I got to tell you it feels like we'll never be finished because new laws happen. Federal laws happen, best practice happens, a training happens. Our work is ever evolving about what's best to do. We have new initiatives where we learn what the best practice is that changes the policy and procedure. I put out what we call program instructions that are in lieu of the policy and procedure changing until that time we can get it officially changed that helps direct practice.
Madam Chair. Reverend Gardner.
Perhaps it's like legislation.
No.
Thank you, Representative Gardner.
Go ahead.
The other two areas that the consultants gave us feedback about and recommendations have to do with what they refer to as our philosophical base from which we operate. And those are what we call our practice standards. We're well on our way to revising and implementing our practice standards, have been for about 2 years. There's a draft paper that talks about who we are, why we are, what we need to be doing that is in draft. And I hope to get out by the end of the money, at the end of the money, at the end of the money, at the end of the month, so that folks can take a look at it and see what they think. And lastly, this was the other report that they gave us feedback about was communication. Absolutely. If we ever figure out how to communicate up and down the chain in the various levels we have effectively, it will be a small miracle. With 500 staff in the state, as far-reaching as Alaska is, it's a constant challenge. I have, communicated with a colleague who says that the state of Washington has successfully implemented a communication strategy, and so I'm going to see what I can lift and see what we can buy but we can get from and make happen to get buy-in from in Alaska. So that's what's happened since last year in a nutshell. There are a couple of things I want to respond to, though, with regard to the CRP before we move to questions, if we could. We in good shape?
Yep.
I want to first mention the Pathways of Hope conference that I've heard a lot about this week in the meetings with the Citizen Review Panel and, again, in testimony.
Did anyone from OCS go to that?
Well, let me tell you the story.
Okay.
In October, well, let me begin by saying that I feel passionately, both personally and professionally as a director, passionately about my relationships and my partnerships with our tribal partners in child welfare. And so whenever I hear a comment or I hear a statement that seems like things aren't going well, I always have to kind of stop and ask myself what that means and what that's about and what am I going to do, because it's something I feel very passionately about. So when I received the Pathways to Hope Save the Date conference cards. I got a stack of them, and I coincidentally had a statewide manager meeting in Fairbanks where I took the stack of cards and I laid them out on the table where we lay all of the things that we want managers to pick up and know about. And I remember saying, this is going to be good. This is really going to be good. We got to figure out a way to get people there, because for Anchorage, it's easy. For other regions without additional travel training money, not so easy, but it was important. I knew what the content was going to be. I knew how important it was. And so I strongly encouraged the managers to take it back to their offices and to talk about it. And that was early October. On October 29th, I received an email from one of the conference organizers. And if you'll indulge me, I just want to highlight a few of the parts of the email. Attached is a registration packet for this conference. Because we are getting so many calls from OCS staff today, I want to advise you that this conference is for Alaska Native people and those serving Alaska Native villages primarily. We don't want to offend anyone when we are rejecting your registration request, so I just wanted to give you a heads up now. We will start a waiting list for urban non-Native agency staff who wish to attend and let you know on December 15th if there is space for you to participate. Because space is limited, we don't know until then if there is room for you to come, meaning OCS. Please understand that it's critical that we prioritize the attendance of Native people and those who are directly providing law enforcement, healthcare, mental health services. So that's why there weren't a lot of OCS staff there.
Did they get back to you on the 15th?
Not to me personally, but fortunately there were a number of OCS staff that had the opportunity to go. Folks from the Bethel area were sponsored by ONC, which we were extremely grateful for. But I guess I wanted just to say for the record that I too and we too knew how important the conference was, and we tried. So I wanted to talk some about the Bethel 5th region. When this became known to me that our decision to move the vacant manager position from Bethel to their regional partners, as it is in every other region in the state.
Excuse me, may I ask a question? I was a little confused about the CRP report, and I should have caught it then, about whether or not the position was vacant. Was it vacant? Went to Wasilla, but it's only been vacant for 2 weeks. So can you just kind of clarify that?
Representative Gardner, absolutely. The regional manager in that region is the only one who has a staff manager. How it works is there are frontline workers, there are supervisors who supervise those frontline workers, and then there are managers. There are staff managers, and there are regional managers, four regional managers, and then the staff managers oversee operations in the field offices. The South Central region is the only region that has a staff manager that's outside of the regional office. It's just an administrative, the way it functions. And so when the position became vacant at the beginning of January, the regional manager made a plea to me to consider a position location change from Bethel to Wasilla, which is where the regional office is, and made a lot of good points, only one of which had to do with costs. There were several other points that I won't go into because I think it's beside the point at this point. But a position location change request was put in. It was approved through the chain, and away we went. We posted it, and then at the beginning of February, or maybe the end of January, these dates are going to be a little confused for me, but then we started to get the outcry from everyone about how could we have moved the manager position to the Wasilla office. And so Mike Lessman and I met with the two legislators who oversee that region, and 2 weeks ago we made a commitment to them to delay or suspend the hire, not make the hire, even though we had posted it and we had applicants, we have applicants, but to put the decision about hiring on hold until we could gather all the information, because I wasn't aware that the decision, until really recently, I wasn't aware that the decision was going to cause as much concern as it has. And so since that time, we have been, so for now, 2 weeks, maybe going on three.
I'm still confused. Was the position vacant when the decision was made? Because you couldn't fill it in Bethel? Okay.
Representative Gardner, through the chair, it was an administrative decision because we thought that it would affect efficiency because they also oversee, that position also oversees Kodiak, Dillingham, King Salmon, the Aleutian chain. And so we thought that having the position, or the theory was, is having the position more centrally located so that they could also see the other oversee and get to more easily the other offices they also manage, rather than remaining in Bethel. And there are a whole host of other reasons why we thought it was a good idea. Again, cost being a minimal reason.
Well, and if I remember, last time we met, it was that Wasilla was having the problems. And so I can kind of see why you thought, oh, well, maybe it would be better if the person was in Wasilla. So let me get this straight in my head. The person for that region has been in Bethel for years, and even though Wasilla was having the biggest problems at that time, now you moved it here and they're saying no. Okay, got it.
Madam Chair, that's correct. And so I have thankfully received, I have also received letters, and the Lieutenant Governor's Office and the Governor's Office and the Commissioner's Office have forwarded the concerns by community stakeholders and concerned members of that community, thankfully, so that I knew that that's what the concern was. And so in the course of this last almost 3 weeks now, we have gotten a good amount of information about why that managerial position should remain in Bethel rather than transfer to Wasilla. And last night, the Deputy Director of the Office of Children's Services has been in Bethel all week and attended the ICWA conference there and met with about 30 community members in Bethel. And I'm here to testify that we're not going to move the position.
Okay, and I'll ask this question, where are you as far as another region? Because just from me trying to observe this, it does seem like it's pretty big and that they could well use two different people, one in Wasilla and one down there. But I don't know all the facts, I'm sure. So,
Madam Chair, I do not disagree with the notion of having a fifth region. Having a fifth region is near as we could gather with regard to the costs, because there are costs. Startup costs could equal around $1.5 million, and the costs afterward to maintain about a little over $800,000. So while I do believe, as does the CRP, that ideally having a fifth region where we could have a western side of the state that includes mostly Native populations would be excellent. We could do that. It will cost money to do that. Is near as we've been able to put together in the last couple of days.
Okay, Representative Sisson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This issue. And I haven't been to those communities asking those questions. I've been to most of the ones that have been gone to. But what I have heard in those communities is a feeling that specifically the Department of Health and Social Services is kind of out of the picture. And that's having talked to the people I've talked to, and I talk to usually between 8 to 10 people a day, usually 2 or 3 days in the places I go to. Last year, we heard a report about, in Wasilla, a situation that people were really concerned about, and the department really said that they were jumping in and working on that one. This year, we're hearing about a situation that is occurring, and the department is dealing with it after a lot of comments, but I think, to me, the thing that's really of concern to me is health and social services, and coming from that field myself, definitely mental health, but nonetheless, one of those the things is the understanding about relationships, mm-hmm. and how things work or don't work built on relationships, and even between the state and individual communities, that's a factor. So what I'm concerned about is how what kinds of procedures can take place that start getting kind of how things are doing in terms of morale, in terms of we're near leaving level in each of these places. It's sort of major. Anchorage itself has some problems, and I've been hearing about that, and I mentioned it in the Finance Subcommittee and heard that everything was going great. And I got to tell you, it's not. Mm-hmm. Somehow we have to do a better job of having relationship build the kind of team that we've got to have to change children's health in Alaska. And how would you respond?
Thank you. Representative Sisna, through the chair, I guess I need to ask another, if I could ask for a clarification. Children's health, children's mental health, the Office of Children's Services, the department. I guess I'm thinking of a number of different things in how I want to respond, but if you could be specific with me about which area you'd like me to respond to.
I'm really concerned about the whole thing. However, when we're talking about OCS, mm-hmm. it's really making sure that if, in fact, something really horrible is happening to these kids, that we've got workers that are ready to respond, that actually can do the job. And when workers are under astounding pressure and feel like they're not being supported, mm-hmm. and they're in a and some of these communities are going through a huge amount right now, mm-hmm. because of the cost of a bunch of things and, yeah, lots of stuff. But nonetheless, that support from above, mm-hmm. is really important to people. And the feeling of, I think I've already said it, but it's those pieces that make sure that the kids have somebody there at the state level that is protecting them, which is our role. That's both ours and yours.
Mm-hmm. Representative Sisna, through the chair, there's a whole myriad of things I would like to say, but in House Finance, I remember being asked what was the number one issue. If I had one thing that I wanted to talk about that was a problem or an issue, the word was retention. We have a retention problem. No ifs, ands, or buts. And in the course of my day, I think about, deal with, and try to find ways to affect retention on an ongoing basis. There are real reasons why workers don't stay in this job that some I have an effect over, others I don't. This work is the hardest, in my opinion, is some of the hardest work that within the Department of Health and Social Services there is to do, because our families and our children and the folks that we deal with aren't voluntary. They don't come to us for assistance like they do public health, like they do public assistance. And that's not to say that my brothers and sisters don't also have hard jobs, but we deal with folks who don't want our help. And the long-standing issues of child abuse and neglect, domestic violence, the issues of poverty in our state play a part. And so while I in no way, shape, or form want to minimize my responsibility with regard to worker retention, there are other factors that are also in play that I constantly am trying to think of ways to battle.
Follow up,
Madam Chair. Thank you. I'm a former foster parent, former worker in foster care treatment programs. And one of the things that I hear now, and I'm hearing it now, and I experienced then in those different roles, was triangulation and the fact that the parents don't feel as if the system, and this is a long-term problem. So when I'm saying this to you, believe me, don't take it personally, because we're talking about a system, and that's my huge concern, is it is a system. But it's a triangulated system where the foster parents feel as if they're in trouble if they advocate for kids, and guess what? They get investigated if they complain. And I've heard this numerous times. The workers feel as if they're not supported and that they're working with people who don't want their help. But then when I've talked in a counseling sense with parents of kids in foster care, they want help and they need help oftentimes, but people don't look at it that way. So to me, it is a system problem, and we've got to deal with it as a system problem, and part of the system problem is a lot of adversaries aren't going to get anything done. And I think that's it.
Representative Gardner.
I'd like to respond just really briefly, and then I have two questions for Ms. Sandoval. I'd just like to point out that there are lots of parents whose kids are in state custody who never make it into counseling. So the people that you see in counseling are not necessarily representative of the entire population, because they're the ones who are making the effort to make some changes. But you make some other good points, so I won't argue with that. But I have two types of questions for you. One is kind of short-term about the technology stuff. Why are we printing documents? Where are the servers? I mean, what is this that takes so long? And then the other question is a broader question, and we talked about it a little bit when you were in my office, and that is about tribal involvement. And it seems to me that, as Representative Cisna says, this is years and years in the making with some slow progress. It seems to me that in this state, the key to really seriously addressing child protection issues lies with tribal governments and local communities, because they are the ones who have the power to change the lives, and what our role should be is figuring out ways to support their efforts. But in the end, local communities have to take control. I mean, they have to decide what they're going to do for their communities, because Anchorage cannot step in and fix things. I mean, it just doesn't work that way. So
through the chair, Representative Gardner, with regard to ORCA and the technology, last year we spent a good deal of money on a fix. Dell or HP, I don't know who they are. Those people, they had a fix for us that we paid for. We rolled out, we put in, all of the IT guys who are so clever put it in, and everything started working wonderfully. Speed was fixed, it was improved. We thought we had solved the problem. We had a miracle. And a couple of months ago, I started hearing that that fix didn't seem to be working anymore. And so the department IT guys got on the horn with the folks that they bought this new software. I don't know if it's software, but whatever the fix was, and said, it's not working anymore. What I heard as of maybe a couple of weeks ago, because I stay in touch about this, we call each other by first name now, and that's good. He says, I don't know what to tell you. We're on it. We're working on it. It's not a problem just for OCS, because we have an MIS, a management information system, that is ORCA. It's connected to. It's web based. It's a problem. But I don't know how to answer the question more specifically, except to say that I'm aware. The department's aware, our IT folks are aware, and connectivity and bandwidth and all those things in the IT world are an issue. I know that's not a very good answer, but it is the answer.
Representative Gardner.
Do we know why it's such a huge problem in Bethel and we're not hearing about it in Anchorage?
Representative Gardner, it's a problem in several other locations. It's not a problem in Anchorage because they have the T1 lines and they have good connections with. I shouldn't be testifying to this. I believe it is my belief that it has to do with satellite they have to, whatever these things are that make computers work in rural and remote areas, that there's a satellite that they bounce off of. And I can't give you any more detail except Anchorage doesn't have that problem. Juneau doesn't have that problem. Fairbanks doesn't have the problem. The places where there are systems, whatever those underground or in the air systems aren't a problem. It has to, I know, I'm sorry.
Madam Chair.
Maybe we'll just go to the second question.
Okay. If I might, Madam Chair, I would say, first of all, it's just magic.
I know.
And I think there may be some instruction here for us as we contemplate a massive healthcare costs database.
Okay.
And the next question.
Representative Gardner, about our tribes and tribal partners, I couldn't agree with you more. One of the things that I've learned since coming to Alaska after making some mistakes, one big mistake 3 years ago, was that we work in partnership with our tribal leaders in child welfare. And there's a motto that we learned in some joint training that we did together, nothing about us without us. And I try to live by that. It's not easy to do when you're making decisions as fast as I sometimes am and as quickly as I have to make them. I wish that I had made the decision regarding the Bethel manager in a different way than I did. I'm going to remedy that. But I agree with you. I think that when you have 60% of the population that you have in foster care is Alaska Native, that you have to and you must engage and you must listen and understand what the tribal issues are and the Native issues are before you're going to decrease the number of Alaska kids in care.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
I think I'm talking about going even further than listening. It's promoting their leadership on the issue so that we're not listening and then making decisions and moving forward, but rather some way where they're in the position of responsibility and they'll tell us what they need.
Well, and I want to make a comment here, too, that it's very difficult to follow up on in some of those areas when maybe some of the people that are making some of these decisions are coming from a very dysfunctional situation. And maybe they're not always thinking in ways they should sometimes. That does happen.
I wouldn't dispute that, Madam Chair, but I think we need to look for those who are, or, you know, I mean, there are people who have wonderful skills and talents all over the state and people
absolutely
from every group, and those are the people that we need to engage in. I had another question that's sort of related to that. And when we talk about the regions of the state and the way that OCS has divided them up, can you talk a little bit about the numbers, the percentages of the caseload that's in each region? And then also importantly, do the dollars that we put into OCS follow those percentages in ratio?
Representative Gardner, through the chair, I didn't come prepared with the data.
Okay.
Although it's easy to get to this committee because it's posted on our website, we know how many kids in what region and what from what office. We can get that data to you easy. With regard to whether the funds follows the percentage of children, I could also get back to you about that. It's not information that I have off the top of my head.
Thank you.
And when you're doing that, I realize that half the population lives in Anchorage, and so those numbers are mm-hmm. going to be skewed a little bit. So can you do it per thousand or something so that we know that there might not be as many cases in some areas, because it's worse in some areas, we might have to be dealing with it in more of the money in an area rather than, you know, I don't know.
Madam Chair, it's like education funding and area cost differentials.
Madam Chair and Representative Gardner, that's exactly what I was thinking, that while half the caseload is in Anchorage,
it
costs more to provide services in other areas. And so I wish it worked that way because it would make my job easier, but it's complicated.
Okay.
Yeah, and I realize it really is. It's not an easy fix, but okay, so let's just look at it a little bit. Can you get a different phone up there in Glen Allen? because I think that if you just get them a telephone that you can forward a call, you know, and that's just buy them a different telephone.
Right.
You know, if you can do that, you know, so that when they're gone, that they can do. I mean, some of these things are can be easy fixes. Mm-hmm. You know, I realize right now that maybe getting somebody up there to answer the phone, mm-hmm. but there should be somebody somewhere in all these areas where if somebody is gone, that those phones need to be transferred so that somebody's answering it. You know, I really think that's important. That's good. And that can be fixed with a $40 telephone, mm-hmm. you know. And you know, if we can get some of this, I'm not saying that's the permanent fix, but for a temporary fix, hey, that would make a lot of people happy mm-hmm. and make life easier for a lot of people. The create a fifth region, that makes sense to me, but I, you know, there again, it's money. Representative Hawker should have been here today to hear all this. Updated technology, if it's something that we can't do too much about, you know, I don't know how to do that. But, you know, if we have to put $12,000 into a server to fix it, then we need to do it, you know. So those are things. There's how many of us are on the 1, 2, 3 of us are on the HESS budget committee that we're going to go to in the morning probably. But
is there I thought it all ran together.
I can't remember. but anyway, you know, we've got to look at some of these things and try to get it. I mean, so can you respond to me in that way? I mean, how soon, how fast?
Absolutely, Madam Chair. Unfortunately, I don't hear about the day-to-day issues that come up in particular offices. I was unaware that Glenn Allen had a phone problem. That you're right, that's an easy fix. In fact, let me just tell you a dream that I have that we have what we call regional intake, that because there are so many offices that only have one person or two persons, that whenever they're out doing their field work, which is the whole purpose and the reason for being, there's not going to be someone there to answer a phone. So my dream is that we have in each region we have designated people who only do phone intake, only take reports so they can be responsive. They're available at all times. They're not doing any other duties, and they specialize at it. I will say, though, for the record, that one of the things that I realized when the CRP was testifying that we have to find a way to make more known is we have an 800 number. So if the community isn't able to get through to their Glen Allen worker or their Seward worker or their Galena worker, they can call the 800 number and they'll take the report. And that's posted on our portal page of our website. So the Bethel server is also new to me. It sounds like that's a new thing. It will be fixed. Bethel should have their own server. They will have their own server. It sounds like something happened to that server. Those are the things that I don't hear today to day, but I'll be going and checking on and finding out the ETA of how soon they can be resolved.
And can you get back with me? I will share it with the rest
Absolutely.
Of the community. Okay, thank you very much. Do I have any other questions? Representative Gardner.
Call forwarding for yes. regional sense.
Yes, exactly.
It's simple, call forwarding.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you.
I appreciate that you came, and Commissioner is sitting back there. Do you have any comments, Commissioner, at all? Or
I just want to thank the Citizens Advisory Council. I want to thank all the folks that have testified, and thank you guys for listening. Appreciate it.
Okay, thank you. These are valid concerns, without a doubt. I will follow up myself on this to make sure that something is done, and we'll see what we can do. Try to make things better. Kids are the most important resource we have in our state, and so we will definitely try to do what we can as legislators. So thank you. Okay, and we are 12 minutes early. Yay.